Welcome to this podcast hosted by World Commerce and Contracting, as well as Icertis. I'm Andre Rapetta. I handle product marketing at Icertis, where I'm really focused on the retail and CPG industry. I spend a good chunk of my time thinking about how contracts can impact the industry and address trends and business needs. I also talk with many customers to really better understand their situations and pain points, as well as other software vendors and consultants that have deep expertise in the industry. Today, I have Robert Hanfield with me. He is the Bank of America University Distinguished Professor of Supply Management at North Carolina State. He's an industry expert who recently authored a paper titled Assessing the Current State of Supply Chain Shortages. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Thanks, Andre.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob. So I'm going to ask you a few questions first, and I think we'll just go ahead and get going. So in your article, you really highlighted the fact that we have rising vaccination rates, we have economy starting to come back, and capital projects beginning to resume. However, we know there's still significant shortages in supply chains. You included a detailed analysis on a number of these areas. In your view, what is the most critical, and really what should be done about it from both, let's say, an enterprise and a government point of view?
Well, you're right. The number of shortages has been increasing in a number of different areas. Consumers are seeing everything from, appliance parts, bicycles, and other products. And as the vaccinations have increased, the spending boom has gone up. People are fed up with being, indoors, and they're going out and they're buying. They've also saved a lot of money, so they're buying a lot of things. We're also seeing, in services, restaurants, demand for labor is rising, but we're seeing a lot of jobs still are vacant, with a lot of people, at least in the U.S., have federal COVID relief checks and aren't spending. We're seeing huge shortages for agricultural commodities, soy, gasoline, diesel, crude oil, coffee, even poultry and beef and so forth. And we're also seeing shortages of things like rubber, and steel prices have gone up incredibly. So there's shortages of steel and shortages of lumber. So we're seeing, with COVID, people are moving out of the cities to the suburbs, and there's been big shortages of housing and steel and lumber that's used in this. And unfortunately, we're also seeing some of these shortages occurring because of rising COVID cases. Chinese operators are, in some cases, increasing prices or even halting operations in manufacturing because of COVID or because of increased demand. A number of the ports in China were shut down because of COVID. And we've also seen apparel companies in Vietnam being shut down because of COVID cases. And that's been impacting companies like all across the board in apparel. A lot of the apparel for Nike and Adidas and some of these companies are still largely dependent on these Vietnamese factories. And then, of course, semiconductors is a big problem. And this is especially problematic because it has been shutting down automotive companies that are producing automobiles. And the lead times on semiconductors have gone from several weeks to 6 months or more, in some cases even shutting down some of them. So, across the board, we're seeing massive shortages, consumer goods, industrial goods, semiconductors, and this has caused a lot of problems in supply chains. And in a sense, it isn't just because of COVID. There's been really a perfect storm of different issues that have gone on. The rise in COVID cases is certainly one part of that. Rising demand, the inability of organizations to increase their capacity. And you can't simply, with supply chains, you can't simply step on the gas and expect them to accelerate. It takes months to get capacity up and running. It takes time, it takes people, it takes capital. And they're just not able to go back into high gear again after being shut down in many cases for so long during COVID. And this has sort of rippled through the supply chain where you have multiple tiers of suppliers that are being asked to increase capacity. In some cases, some of them sent their people home. They just can't bring them back and get them going again quickly. So this is really a problematic sort of issue. And unfortunately, there's not really a lot that governments can do. They're sort of wringing their hands and saying, you know, come on, we need to be able to support, manufacturing, especially domestic manufacturing. And we've seen this with, you know, the Biden administration and others who have said they're going to support the increasing domestic production. Here again, you can't just say that you're going to support domestic production and have it happen immediately. And so there's some real issues here with the ability to start up these supply chains and get these sort of stranded assets suddenly back productive again and moving, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. Thanks so much. Yeah, I know you touched on the semiconductor shortage, especially its impact on the automobile industry. And I'm originally from Detroit, so that's one that's definitely near and dear to my heart. Can you provide a little more insights on how we actually got here and how dire is the current situation? We know that the Biden administration is talking about reshoring as the semiconductor industry. I'm sure there's a lot of challenges there, and just would kind of like to hear your insights in terms of, you know, how you think we can best make that happen.
Well, as you point out, the semiconductor shortages, automobiles have increasingly been using more and more semiconductors in the electronics that are used in automobiles. And we're seeing, you know, companies like Stellantis, which is the old Fiat Chrysler company, and Peugeot conglomeration, they've experienced severe car shortages due to lack of chips, as has Ford, General Motors, et cetera. Toyota has fared a little better. And one of the reasons is they realized that they needed to buy ahead. And automotive companies, being from Detroit, you know, the big three sort of throw their weight around and expect people to jump. Well, that doesn't really work in semiconductors. Automotive is only about 10% of semiconductor production. The majority of it goes to the electronics sector. And the semiconductor industry, the way it's structured is, you know, 90% of it is in Asia. And the bulk of that is in Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing. About 50% of all semiconductors come from TSMC, but another 30% come from Samsung, and the remainder come from others. So this is problematic, and we've seen the lead times for chips stretching out to 15 weeks for the first time since 2017. For some specialized semiconductors, they've even gone up to 22 weeks, which is unheard of. And your chip making capacity has increased, but it doesn't increase quickly. Chip makers are very conservative, especially companies like TSMC, and they're not going to build ahead of the growth in sales. It's very expensive to build a chip plant. It's very, very capital intensive. And so buyers have been sort of scooping up capacity as soon as it comes online. But because of the uncertainty in the pandemic, they haven't had, you know, a lot of people thought demand was going to drop. And in fact, automotive companies, you know, stopped placing orders for semiconductors during COVID, suddenly realized their mistake, that demand, in fact, was increasing, and went back and asked for more. But again, it takes time to build these wafer fabs, and often occurs in chunks. It's not a smooth process. One of the biggest bottlenecks is what they call the logic chips that come from Qualcomm, NVIDIA, and Apple. These companies don't own their own fabrication plants. They outsource them to foundries. And 90% of the chip making business, again, is within Asia with TSMC and Samsung. So we've also seen here again some COVID outbreaks in Taiwan that disrupted supply. But a lot of the a lot of the chip making capacity is just, you know, been sucked up by the increase in demand for electronics as a result of COVID. Taiwan TSMC accounts alone for 92% of the output of the world's most sophisticated chips. And they're also seeing some huge challenges. Now, Biden's new supply chain disruption task force plan promotes growth in the semiconductor industry. And they've supported nearly $75 billion in direct investments from the private sector. The mistake that people make is that, again, this is not going to occur overnight. You have an entire supply chain in Taiwan associated with TSMC. We've mapped out actually the TSMC supply chain. We're working on a research project. And they have over 4,000, you know, tier three suppliers, over 2,500 tier two suppliers. You can't just move these suppliers overseas suddenly and start producing semiconductors in the United States. It's naive to think that you can. And there's an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning that also talked about this is a critical infrastructure element that you know, we really need to be thinking about and reshoring. But again, it's going to take a lot of time to do this. Part of the challenge with moving it from Taiwan is there's an entire community of, I call them old timers, you know, of people who went to school together. They founded the 50 largest companies in Taiwan's semiconductor network. So there's a big, you know, tacit communication network. There's a big relationship network there in Taiwan. There's a lot of inherent knowledge. Chip making is a bit like voodoo. It's not easily done. There's some tricks to the trade. And a lot of that knowledge resides in Taiwan with some of these old-time manufacturers who really understand how to make this. Now, there is some movement towards trying to promote a domestic semiconductor industry. There's a company called NextFlex, which is a hybrid electronics manufacturing institute. And one of the things they're trying to promote is the ability to be able to sort of develop these fabs, you know, from customized components that can produce sort of assembly operations closer to home using these different chips from different organizations. Again, we're a long way off from leveraging this small investment into a $450 billion a year industry. But we also need the people to work in these new jobs. So there's a lot of challenges alone in the semiconductor sector.
Sounds like it. That sounds like a big challenge we have ahead of us, no doubt. We've talked a lot about supply chains and disruptions. I'd also like to get your insights on how maybe some successful companies are really leveraging digitization and contracts to really improve their supply chains now, as well as into the future.
Well, that's a great question. I think digitization is obviously on the forefront. You know, one of the things that we're really strongly promoting that organizations do as they start moving to a digital future is to look at their data, you know, to think about data governance and data quality. We run an annual data governance and data quality survey, and we're seeing that the state of data quality is generally getting better, but it's getting better slowly. And so, you know, you can't really have digital analytics and digital contracts if you have this, you know, crappy data that really is full of errors and doesn't really reflect what's going on in your operations. So we're really thinking that organizations need to be thinking about how to build these data warehouses, to think very strongly about which data to prioritize and which data should really be focused on to make sure that it's clean, that it's cleansed, that it's timely, and putting those into a secure environment that allows that data to be used exclusively for those digital applications. Digital contracts is one of those areas. And certainly we think there's a lot of really interesting work being done around smart contracts, contracts that can be linked to different events that can update, you know, the different clauses, different terms and conditions, different types of issues that occur. And to also to alert people when there's been a you know, a contractual event that would trigger a renegotiation or you know, a price increase or price reduction or what have you. So there's a lot of room for some very interesting digital contracting work to be done. And I know that's an area that, WCC has worked on. And I wonder if you could share with me, you know, maybe a little bit about some of the work that WCC has done in this area around collaboration, certainly as retailers and suppliers have had to scramble to address these shortages, but also around what you guys have learned in terms of digitization, including contracts.
Yeah, thanks so much. So as you know, WorldCC and Icertis, recently we conducted a series of roundtables and interviews that was all conducted in the first half of 2021. It included supply chain as well as legal executives, really from the retail food and CPG industry. And they really shared their experiences of managing through the pandemic. We used learning to develop a white paper. We called it Reimagining Retail and CPG Relationships as an Ecosystem of Contracts. And as you kind of mentioned, the focus was really on these supply chain disruptions coming out of a volatile period due to COVID, really exposed the need to make clear business decisions, of course, with visibility to data flows and how CLM can really be a key tool to help some of those leaders address today's challenges and be ready for what may come next. Rob, I think you had a chance to read the article. Did anything in particular strike you, or did you have any questions that I could help with?
Yeah, I think what was interesting to me was that, there's some suggestions here that, you know, those who have navigated the COVID crisis a little better have also been the ones that are really better able to sort of manage and digitize their supply chain and their relationships. I've personally seen how, you know, a lot of the CPG companies we've worked with have seen a lot of weakness in demand followed by huge jumps in demand. And to be able to, really think about flexible operating models that can address some of these challenges, I think is been really important. One of the things that I'd like to learn more about that maybe hasn't, I don't know if it was really came out in that study, but what were the types of contractual elements that were used between these CPG retailers and manufacturers? Did you see increasing digital contracts being used, or what were some of the things that were being done there?
Great question. So I know, we definitely learned that the pandemic, obviously accelerated trends, really compressing changes that might normally take, let's say, 7 to 10 years into a matter of months. And, we really heard from a lot of our interviewees that I think it was about 92% of grocery and CPG retailers and 85% of suppliers really said that collaboration had improved. In fact, they told us that, supply relationships became stronger and more collaborative, especially in the food and consumer goods sectors, as these organizations were really forced to work together to overcome some of the problems that were quickly thrust upon them during the pandemic. We also heard that some of these, relied on relationships to help get through the situation. And, we know that can work in limited instances. Really most indicated that a more comprehensive framework is really going to be needed to address some of these unknown future scenarios. And some interviewees even acknowledged that impacted contracts could be identified, sometimes the contract language really provided little guidance for these organizations because the terms and conditions embedded in the contracts were really never designed to deal with such dramatic events and levels of uncertainty. Unfortunately, we know many organizations really lack the technology that would give rapid access to some of this key data to really identify rights and obligations or to better anticipate and respond to some of these supply risks. So we really know that they, some of them were fairly set up to help address some of these, seems like the vast majority really need to invest more in both the technology, the digitization, as well as potentially some of the artificial intelligence and other features that CLM can potentially provide.
You know, one of the areas I noted as well was, you know, it was mentioned in the area, it wasn't expounded on, is some of the issues around transportation. You know, in our report, we also looked at, you know, these extreme freight and truck driver shortages are really becoming problematic. You know, there is a shortage of both trucks, you know, capital, as well as drivers in this market. And we're also seeing the same thing with container shortages. All the containers are, you know, overseas. They're not in China. And as a result, they're not able to ship because in some cases there aren't enough containers to ship these products overseas. So, you know, I think we're going to see, my observation is we're likely to see ongoing disruptions and shortages through the remainder of 2021, probably well into 2022. For semiconductors, it could go into 2023. And I think we're almost certainly going to see inflation start to increase. There's no doubt that these shortages are producing increases in prices, and we're certainly going to see that. And I think that may also trigger a set of renegotiations of contracts as we start to see prices start to rise. And people are going to have to work out how to deal with that inflationary scenario, something we haven't dealt with for probably more than 10 years. Well, thank you very much for this time, Andre. I think it has been a useful discussion. And any parties that are interested in learning more, you should get a hold of the ICERTIS Retailer Consumer Shortage Report and the report that we've done on inflation and different shortages coming up. Thank you.
Thanks again, Robbie. And we really appreciate you participating and truly appreciate the insights and look forward to speaking with you again. And as you mentioned, if you're interested in learning more, we definitely have our paper, The Reimagining Retail and CPG Relationships as an Ecosystem of Contracts. So that's definitely available for you to read and digest. I think I get a lot of great learning out of it. So thanks again so much, and have a great day.